Hi there, Alphonse here, and up next is going to be a gentleman named Mike Ferner. Mike Ferner was an independent member of Toledo City Council, organized public employees union, worked for the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, and for the program on corporations, law, and democracy. Mike has traveled twice to Iraq just prior to the U.S. invasion in 2003. With Voices in the Wilderness delegation, and again in 2004 for 2 months as a freelance writer. His book about those trips, Inside the Red Zone, a Veteran for Peace report from Iraq, is due out in August of 2006. Right out of high school, Mike enlisted in the Navy as a hospital corpsman, taking care of hundreds of soldiers wounded in the Vietnam War. Convinced him to become a conscientious objector and leave the military after 2 years of service. He has been involved in the peace movement ever since and is a member of the Veterans for Peace.
We're talking with Mike Ferner, and he's a anti-war activist. So, Mike, what's new in the fight against these wars that the U.S. is engaged in?
Well, the one thing that I wished I could report that's new would be a sufficient groundswell of opposition and people taking over their local congressional offices and sitting in until these guys quit voting money for the war. You know, anybody who's been watching the polls can see that a good solid majority of the population now thinks that going to war in Iraq, at least, was a big mistake. But somehow it doesn't seem we're able to motivate the peace movement to the level of activity and intensity that's going to be necessary, because you know, these guys in Washington are not going to get out until we put enough heat on them to let them know that their jobs are at stake. So we tried doing a variety of things, and hopefully one of these things is going to be the spark that's going to set it off.
What's your best bet so far as far as unfunding? So you're saying we need to unfund the war and fire the people responsible for it?
Well, those two things would be a good start. you know, there's got to be, the pressure's got to come from below, from the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the decisions are going to have to be made to stop voting money for this war are going to have to come from Congress. So, I'd love to see Bush get impeached and half of Congress get impeached as well, but it's going to take a huge grassroots political effort to make that happen. And you know, that seems to be a question that a lot of people of the peace movement are asking right now. You know, how do we up the ante? How do we get this to the next level? You know, how do we get a sufficient number of people motivated and out in the streets and making the country ungovernable until we quit the war that's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and get out of those people's countries? So that's, you know, that's the $64 billion question right now.
Well, I know that that I and the organizations that that I've developed and have joined are trying very hard to get people motivated to get up and stand up for what's right. There's war crimes going on, violations of the Geneva Convention. There's depleted uranium, which is really not depleted. It's like a permanent poison on the earth, and we're really concerned about that. And we're going to increase public awareness. That's our goal, increase public awareness of the terrible aspects of war, and especially the terrible aspects of this war, where we didn't need to fight it, we were lied into it. So that's what we're doing. We're doing that over the internet, over the airwaves. We've got a new organization that we just started called Veterans for 911 Truth. The people believe that 911 was an inside job that was designed to create pretext for the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq and probably even Iran. And that seems to be developing. This war is not. It seems to be expanding, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah. That's the crazy thing, you know. With a solid majority of the public against it at this point, and the leaders in Washington are going hell bent for leather to expand it into Iran. So it's really clear they've got an agenda, and they're going to work that agenda until they're stopped.
Now, they've published their agenda, and a project for the new American century, rebuilding America's armed forces for the new century, as well as the big new Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard. You can see what their plans are, and they're so arrogant that they actually publish this stuff and put it on the internet.
It is amazing. It is amazing. I guess when you're the empire, you feel pretty omnipotent, so just do whatever you want.
Yeah, they're doing whatever they want. Now, they talked about the need for a new Pearl Harbor and got it. And they also mentioned things like genetically specific biological weapons would change bioweapons from the area of terrorism into a politically useful tool, something to that effect, they said. So they're very scary people, these neocons. So what... Are the people in the peace movement? How's their morale? Are they up? Are they getting more excited about it, or are they losing steam?
Well, to be honest, I can't say that I have my finger on the pulse of the entire movement around the country, but I am in touch with people in a number of cities, and. It seems wherever you go, the citizens, you know, the grassroots activists, are very enthused and are very active and are always coming up with new and creative ways of speaking out and publicizing what's going on in the war. But there seems to be, and I don't want to read too much into this because this is based on scientific polls, but there seems to be a kind of a frustration that we haven't been able to make more of a dent in the heads of the policymakers. And I think that's going to require us to get a little more serious about some of the tactics that we're using. For example, maybe having a couple hundred thousand people in Washington or New York once or twice a year is not enough. Maybe we got to move beyond that. It's not to say that there's anything wrong with doing that, but maybe we need to start putting our heads together and figure out a way of beginning a whole series of sit-downs in congressional offices and civil disobedience actions all over the country, because we're going to have to really disrupt business as usual in order for these guys to realize that it's going to be more expensive to keep this war going than it is to bring it to a halt.
Well, there's certainly a lot at stake. I'm sure you probably attended the protest, the large protest in Washington, D.C. last summer, the one where tularemia was detected. And I see that the media covered that in about 96 words, and that's it. I think that our media is a real problem, because you do a protest to get attention and to send a signal and a message to the public about what's going on, and the media doesn't even talk about it. What do you think of our media?
Well, it's one of the biggest problems that we've got. You know, if we had a news media that was really doing its job, I question whether we'd even be in this war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll give you a couple of examples just from things that I've seen. And probably most of your listeners can come up with their own examples. But I went to Iraq just prior to the invasion in 2003, and I went there with a group called Voices in the Wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And my job for the month that I was there was to do news releases and try to do kind of PR work for Voices with the press that was there in Baghdad, and there were reporters, news agencies there from dozens of countries that were in Baghdad prior to the invasion. And I would go around and distribute news releases about an activity that Voices was going to do, for example, two or three times during the month of February in 2003. We hung banners on either a water treatment plant or an electrical station or a hospital, kind of targets that George Bush the First bombed in 1991. And the banners said to bomb this site is a war crime, violation of the Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would, you know, put the banner there and have a couple of speakers. And every time we did this, there were a dozen or more reporters from foreign press, from press outside of the United States. And never once, at least during that month that I was there, where we did several of these kinds of activities, were we ever covered by any U.S. reporters. And, you know, there's just one example after another of that. One time I was walking through the Ministry of Information and was passing out news releases on another thing that Voices was doing, and I had my Veterans for Peace cap on, and some guy in an American accent hailed me down from across the hall, and turned out that he had been in the Marines and he was a producer for ABC. And wanted me to go on the early show the next day with, I forget the host's name, but he said he wanted to do a live interview on the early show tomorrow, the network ABC. And I said, well, sure. So I showed up. I waited about a half an hour, and he stuck his head out the door and kind of sheepishly said, well, they just announced the Academy Award nominees, so I'm afraid we're going to have to bump you. And that's just the sort of thing that goes on day after day after day, and people here just don't get a very good understanding of what's going on. You know, you would think people would just intuitively know that there is mass suffering and death and injury that's happening as a result of this war, but unfortunately, in the United States, it seems if you don't see it on TV, it's not.
Yeah, if it's not on TV, it just doesn't, it never happen.
Yeah.
The TV would have told them. They have this hypothesis, the TV would tell me.
Yeah.
If that happened, it would have told me.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't, and they don't know what they're missing. Well, it's been said the people of America are the best entertained, least informed people on the planet.
I can start to believe that. And, you know, this really sad thing is that this, what you just mentioned, the best entertained and worst informed, is working to keep the folks in power that are running their game right now. The really sad thing is that not only is that working, but you see time after time where if people actually do get to see what's going on,
mm-hmm.
they respond in a very empathetic way. That, you know, they don't want to think that their government is doing this sort of thing. It sort of makes you wonder what do they think is going on. But like, you know, like I said, if they don't see it on TV, it didn't happen. So
yeah, it's just amazing.
We get the point across that, you know, we're causing terrible death and suffering in these wars, including obviously to our own men and women. But just we need to get that point across to more and more people.
Well, one way that I think would probably be one chink in their armor is depleted uranium. I just the other day interviewed Lauren Moray, and I'll be interviewing Doug Araki. They're the ones who did the documentary called Beyond Tyranny, and it kills our troops. It's a poison. And it's lighter than air, and it gets proliferated all over the globe, so it affects everybody. And I think, and Lauren Murray thinks, that it's a good idea to try to bring the DU issue to the forefront because it affects everybody. And nobody's immune to it, not even these people who are doing this war, causing this war, are immune to it. And And that could, because it's a war crime, too, to use the stuff. It kills people indiscriminately, does permanent damage to the ecology and the DNA of the people who are exposed to it. So the poor Iraqi people and the people in Afghanistan have quite the terrible future to look forward to of birth defects and disease, and I'm absolutely sure that this is against the Geneva Convention. So that's one place where I think that that the Veterans for 911 Truth are going to focus on is this depleted uranium problem.
Well, I hope that is something that really does fire the public's imagination, because, as you said, it is a dreadful weapon. When I was in Iraq prior to the invasion, we spent a few days in the southern part of the country in Basra, and actually went all the way down to the border with Kuwait, the Iraq-Kuwait border, which is where the main force of the U.S. invasion came across a few weeks later. And the doctors in some of the hospitals in Basra told us of this enormous increase in childhood cancers and birth defects, leukemia, and they said they had very, very little of that prior to the 1991 war, when in the southern parts of the country there was a fair amount of a couple hundred tons of depleted uranium munitions that were exploded in the 1991 war. Well, in this latest invasion in 2003 and in the ongoing war, there's been hundreds and hundreds of tons of this stuff that has been expended all over the country. And so it's not just in the southern part of the country now, and I fear that we're going to see the same kind of epidemic of birth defects and childhood leukemias and cancers throughout the rest of the country that the people were experiencing in Basra. And as you mentioned, this stuff is terribly long-lived. It's going to be around for billions of years, and it's going to come home to haunt us environmentally, and also in the tragedies that we're going to be seeing when servicemen and women have kids and they're born with these same kinds of defects. It's a war crime of the worst magnitude, and I hope this is one of the things that grabs people's attention and motivates them to get busy to stop this.
Yeah, excuse me. I certainly hope so. I'm to understand that they try to not help the veterans. They try to say, well, this is not a disease. And they won't admit that it has this detrimental effect. I mean, permanent detrimental effect. Their troops come home, and they have this radioactivity even in their semen, and they infect their families with it and cause them to become ill. So since it's pretty much all pervasive, and it could and probably will affect everybody on the globe, I think that it's that people need to know about this. It's freedom of information. They need to know that this war may be costly to their health and the health of their children, and that'll help to get people motivated, because there's nothing like the fear of death and disease to motivate people. But we don't have access to the mass media, so we'll only be able to affect millions of people while they're, talking, telling the big lie to millions and millions. They've got everybody, and you can't pry these people away from their TV long enough to talk to them. They're too busy going to work, taking care of kids in soccer practice, and watching TV to even talk to anybody. So we've got quite a mountain to climb here, but we need to, and of course, if you don't do anything, nothing will happen, so doing something is a heck of a lot better, and that's what you and I have been doing for some time now, trying to help make the world a better place. Imagine that. Oh, why not?
What a revolutionary thought. You know, the encouraging thing about it is that when people hear something that resonates true to them, it has a much bigger impact proportionally than five bushels of the same old bullshit that gets pumped out of the radio and TV all the time. So it's not that we need to be able to get our message heard as many times as the neocons do, because we're never going to be able to do that. But we do need to get it out there. And when people hear it, it's going to cut through the fog of lies that they're getting so much from this administration. So, it's a much smaller scale that we're working on, but fortunately, it resonates with people with at smaller doses, let's say.
Yeah, we need to. I think we need to get the word out to a few people, and then those few tell their friends, and their friends tell their friends, and that's the start of a grassroots movement. And with the internet at our disposal, we should be more effective than we ever could be before, since we do have the capability to communicate to a lot of people on a fairly massive scale. I don't know if we should become the media, but which is difficult to do because they'll try to stop us from getting radio stations, from getting television stations. But that's what we should have been working on, in my opinion, a long time ago, and working against the consolidation, like the 1996 Telecommunication Act, which allowed the people with this neocon agenda to purchase all the media and use it as a propaganda machine. And they've been brilliant in implementing that.
Yeah.
But they have the power of money, political connections, and they're... and justifies the means for the greater good, anything goes, type of people, Straussian philosophers. So that's what happened. That's how we sort of got where we are now. And now we've got to undo this problem with the media so that we can tell people the truth. They're simply, quite simply, being misled and lied to on a massive scale. So I don't know how you take care of that now that it's festered into the wound that it is now. But that's the chore that we have to partake in. Otherwise,
absolutely, people aren't going to be able to make a decent decision on which way to go on this issue or any issue without the information that they need. I wanted to mention something to you and hopefully have maybe be some food for thought for your listeners. A couple of years ago, I was at the Veterans for Peace Conference in Boston, and Dan Ellsberg and Howard Zinn were a couple of the main speakers, and they were wonderful as usual. And I think it was Ellsberg who mentioned that he started out his remarks by saying, well, you know, here I am preaching to the choir again. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we sometimes chide ourselves over, that we don't move beyond the choir very often. But he put an interesting perspective on it. He said, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. He said the choir is the group of people who are most informed about what's going on with this war and are the most likely to take action.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's very true. And to take that the next step, though, and this is what I'm hoping that you and some of your listeners, and maybe some of the feedback that you get, will come up with some ideas. But how do you, when you're addressing the folks who are already concerned, how do you? What do you do to motivate them to say, well, you know, I've never done this before. I'm going to try that. That feels kind of scary, but I'm going to try it. During the Winter of Our Discontent program that we did in Washington with the Voices for Creative Nonviolence, about a half a dozen of us did a 34-day fast between February 15th, which was the anniversary of the big peace demonstrations around the world just prior to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, and March 20th, which was the anniversary of the invasion. For that 34-day period, we did a fast in Washington. And again, the media wasn't very good at telling people about it, but when people did hear about it through the internet and so forth, we got a a lot of responses from people saying, oh, thanks for doing this. You know, this is mm-hmm. great. And what I tried to tell them as often as I could was, well, you know, it's very gracious of you to say that, but we don't really need your thanks. What we need is for you to look into your heart and see what it is that you can do that you never thought you could do, and do that. And that, I guess, is the challenge. That's the question. You know, how can we urge people to do that and take this seriously so that they don't just look at somebody doing something and say, oh, isn't that great? Or, oh, what a nice demonstration that was. But, you know, really take it well beyond that. And I don't know. You know, if you have ideas, some of your listeners have ideas about it, it would be great to kick this thing around and try to come up with some better ways of doing it.
Well, we just started the Veterans for 911 Truth, and we've got this group, a Yahoo group, and I've been very encouraged by some of the ideas that have been come across, some of the things we've done to try to expose this particular government and what they've been doing. Here's a guy from Colorado. I'm looking at the at some comments on the group page now. Here's a guy from Colorado that does a podcast, and he wants to podcast what we're doing. And we've got a military theme. Since we're veterans, we've got a military theme to our organization and our website. We call our project Operation Vigilant Truth. And now we've got another operation, Operation Inform Vets, where we're contacting veterans organizations to get them involved in what we're doing, which is exposing the government's corruption and the possibility. We advocate an investigation into 911 due to the anomalies surrounding it. I'm doing interviews and proliferating it all over the internet. Another fellow is going to go to a Memorial Day meeting in Philadelphia. You know, this is where they put up gravestones and try to show the human cost of war. And we're going to talk to those people about what we're doing, which is exposing government corruption and probably the murder of 3,000 people on 911. Our membership is growing fast, and they're mostly veterans, although anyone can join, enlist in this urgent cause. And so that's what we're trying to do, is get the word out. We're doing it in many different ways. People are burning DVDs on their computers and just going to any kind of public assembly and handing them out. We're also flying our flags upside down. And that's a signal. It's legal to do this, and it's a signal of dire distress. And that's kind of eye-popping and eye-catching, and our members are doing that to, you know, try to communicate to people that we're in trouble here. This is serious business. And even if you believe the lies that you see on the TV, you're going to be quite surprised one day when you wake up to what the results of this war, and these wars, I should say, Afghanistan, Iraq, and impending wars in possibly Iran or Jordan or who knows where. They do plan to expand this, and that's what we're doing. I think the upside down flag is just a great idea, because it sends a real clear symbol and signal to people that this is not business as usual. This is not the United States we used to know. There's something completely different going on here, and we're, you know, in my opinion, going down the road to fascism, which is where the elite corporatists own and control virtually everything. And the problem is they always want more, too.
Yeah, it's never done.
So that's what we're doing. And we're trying to organize and enlist the help of other veterans. We're contacting them and joining up with them to try to create a more cohesive coalition to do something about this. Like, we have a member called, his name is Dr. Robert Bowman, Lieutenant Colonel, retired. He's joined us, and he's a rocket scientist, a war hero, a Vietnam combat veteran. He was former head of the Star Wars program under Reagan. And we also have former attorney generals of states that are joining in their efforts as well. We've kind of morphed out of Scholars for 911 Truth. And so that's what we're doing. We're trying to get these guys, these crooks out of power by suing them, making people aware of them and what they've been up to, which is just some of the nastiest stuff, and well, it is the nastiest stuff in U.S. history. Never been anything like this before.
But I'd like to throw another idea in addition to those excellent tactics that you're talking about, if I could.
Sure.
I mentioned it briefly here a couple times, but the idea of doing civil disobedience actions and sitting in at congressional offices, just about any city of any significant size has got local offices for your senators and congresspeople. And one thing that I've found after having been arrested a few times myself in some of these protests is that most people are not aware of how easy a tactic this is to do and relatively painless. But people should understand that there are, in just about every city, there are some people who have some experience with this who can explain to people what the procedures are. Almost all the time when you let the police know that you're going to be blocking a recruiting station or whatever you plan to do or going to a congressional office, most frequently the police are pretty civil. When you catch them unawares, things get out of hand, that's another situation altogether. But the nonviolent civil disobedience protests, generally the police are pretty decent. The time that people have to spend in jail is really pretty minimal. A lot of times it's overnight at most. A lot of times you have to stay overnight. The fines, now some people out of conscience don't want to pay the fine. They'll get sentenced to so many days in jail as opposed to paying a fine. But for people who don't mind paying a fine, usually they're quite minimal. And so the whole thing is not nearly as scary as a lot of people think it is. From growing up, one of the things you're always told, oh, don't you ever want to get arrested, you don't ever want to go to jail. But, I can say from experience that it's not nearly the boogeyman that it has been made to, that we've been made to think about it. And people should consider doing more of this sort of thing because we look back through history and see the huge popular movements that really made changes in society, and at some point in those movements people decided that they just were going to have to break the law because the law is unjust. So I hope this is one thing that people give a little more consideration to in addition to some of the things that you were talking about.
Well, I know that you hit the headlines of the local papers and maybe even national news for some civil disobedience where you and your brother were using paint. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's pretty wild. You can stand out on the street corner with the poster and circulate a petition until you're blue in the face, and you get the impression not very many people are noticing, but boy, you take a can of spray paint to a highway overpass, and all of a sudden it's news all over the place. But it was New Year's Day. My brother and I went out in the morning and tagged a couple of highway overpasses near Toledo here. Said, troops out now. And the highway patrol and the township police pulled us over. There was actually five squad cars that pulled us over, like the beginnings of the O.J. Simpson chase. So we got arrested, spent the night in jail, and I've got a trial. We got charged with felony counts. Believe it or not, it's a felony.
Yikes.
One of the charges was possession of a criminal tool, which was the can of spray paint. And so anyway, my brother has pled to the misdemeanor. They pled down the plea bargain the case down to misdemeanors, and my brother pled guilty to the misdemeanors. And I'm going to go to trial on the felony charges that they originally charged us with, just so I can have a trial and introduce evidence about the war as best we can, and really try to tell people, look, you know, this is what's going on, and you know, I'll take the fine, I'll spend the time in jail, whatever the jury decides, but this is another opportunity to really force people in the community to think about what we're doing.
Well, that's good. That's good.
You know, one way of looking at this, obviously the greatest cost is the sort of things that we've been talking about, the depleted uranium, the health effects, environmental effects, the death and suffering that's going on. But, of course, there's also the money involved. And if you take a look at some of the websites that publish updated amounts of money, and you can go to National Priorities Project has a website, and you can find out how much money, how much tax money has gone from your state or your city to the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I've looked it up for the city of Toledo, and there is actually more money that has gone to this war from the city of Toledo, tax money, than it takes to run the entire city's operation for a year, everything in the city. And if that's the case here in Toledo, it's probably the case in city after city around the country. So all these cities that are having trouble with schools and libraries and, you know, streets and you name it, all of the stuff that we so desperately need in all of our communities, and you look at the amount of money that's being sucked out of our cities and sent to this war, we could finance the entire operation of our cities around the country for what we're spending on this war.
Wow. What, is there a website for the, that has that information in a nice format?
Yeah, I don't have the URL memorized, but it's the National Priorities Project.
National Priorities Project.
And if you just Google that, you can get to their site, and they have federal spending broken down in a number of areas. And if you check out the site there, you can get to the part where they have the war spending, and then it's broken down by state and by cities.
Well, I'll bet some communities probably benefit mightily from the war. You know, if they happen to have a military industrial complex facility or a manufacturer or a tank plant or something like that, they probably do okay during wartime. And while some metropolises suffer greatly if they don't have that.
And it's most. It is by far most of the urban areas, not just urban areas, but by far the majority of the population, just on a dollars and cents basis. I mean, the communities that have military production facilities where there is some jobs for the production of armaments, those really are small in number. But we hear a lot about them because the powers that be make a big deal about the economic benefit, but really it's a very small number compared to the overwhelming number of communities that are just being bled dry by this.
Mm. That's appalling. Of course it's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost our society. It might even bring down the whole country if we don't watch it.
I mean, it's happened to every empire. I mean, you name an empire that has not fallen. And when you look back through history, you can see that one of the significant factors in the destruction of every one of these empires has been their overreaching militarily and trying to control more and more and more of the world. whether that was the known world around the Mediterranean or the entire globe today, it doesn't matter. And every one of these empires, Rome, Britain, every one of them. So here, we in the empire right now, in some ways, are benefiting by being citizens of the empire, but it's going to come around to bite us or our children for sure. But there's no escaping it.
Now, there's usually a crash after the rise. The United States became an empire quicker than any empire had ever done before, and we're probably going to fall faster than any empire has before. It's going to be short-lived empire, looks like. And it'd been nice if we would have been really benevolent and altruistic, like we say we are, because we're not. And there's books out like Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins that indicate that we're certainly not helping people out. We're helping ourselves to their resources. You want to talk about a cause for terrorism and resistance. Well, there it is right there. We're exploiting third world nations, or any nation we can get our hooks into. People are figuring that out, and they may resist, and that would be, in my opinion, a justifiable resistance, but our propaganda machine would call it terrorism.
Yeah, yeah. There's another excellent publication out, a booklet by a Texas professor of communications, Robert Jensen. And it's called Citizens of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a great job of describing some of the myths that are driving the empire here in the United States. You know, things like we think that we've been told since we were kids and believe in the myth that the United States gets involved militarily only to protect freedom and democracy. And, the greatest nation there's ever been, and so forth. And he goes through each one of these things and describes how dangerous it is to be thinking that way if you're an individual in society or a nation on the earth. And it's very plainly spoken and articulate. I really recommend it. It's called Citizens of the Empire by Robert Jensen.
I've heard Robert Jensen speak. He's very articulate. Makes the message real simple and easy to understand. But that sort of message, it would be considered in many circles anti-American. They tell you to go move to Cuba or something.
Yeah.
They attack the messenger. And
yeah.
I think the people of the United States get indoctrinated and are fed, like you say, myths about what we're up to. But if you look at history and see what people like General Smedley Butler say, who said that he's nothing more than a high-paid thug for United Fruit Company. And if we knew the truth, if the American people knew the truth, I think that that things would be different. And that's one of the ways that the elite of our country, the military-industrial complex people, get away with what they're doing because they, just lie, basically. And they have a media that proliferates the lies and makes it the truth, and even the educational system. A great book by Charlotte Iserbeit is just fascinating. All documented, part public record, really. The deliberate dumbing down of America. And it talks about the indoctrination techniques and the way that our educational system doesn't educate, it trains. It trains people like you'd train Pavlov's dog or use Skinnerian behavior modification on people. And that's one of the reasons why we're in the boat we're in, where there's massive ignorance. And on that sea of ignorance swims the Bush neocon.
Yeah, young people coming out of schools equipped to do some critical thinking is the last thing in the world they want to see. They want people to come out educated enough to be workers and consumers and keep the whole treadmill going, but, you know, not ask any really tough questions. And you see it happening in school district after school district, state after state. You know, more and more you hear from teachers, oh, we don't have time to do any project on this or discuss that anymore because we've got these tests that are coming up and we have to teach the students to what's going to be on this test so we can pass the test because, you know, it's just a whole conveyor belt approach to education. What we're getting are docile consumers that are going to take their place and not challenge the system. And that's exactly what we need to be doing, is more of that.
Anti-socialism, individualism, and which makes the individual isolated and all by themselves. We don't have any community anymore. Not as much as there once was, and that's what the elites try to undermine, is the community, so that we can't or are reluctant to get together and oppose the powers that be, the government. That's what they're doing. It's very, very methodical and very deliberate. This is no accident that this is happening.
They've made this whole individualism business, they've taken it to the ridiculous extreme of the armies. One of their campaign pitches is an army of one, to appeal to this sense of individualism. Well, what a joke. I mean, if there is ever an institution where you're never going to be an individual, it's the military.
That's not.
You know, this whole business of having an army of one is just the. It's just the.
Be all you can be.
Yeah.
Part of a huge group that takes orders.
Yeah.
Without thinking.
Cut off all your hair and dress you in the same baggy uniforms, and you're going to be an individual army of one.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I think we'll wrap it up here. And it's been a pleasure talking with you. And we probably got some good ideas together. And we hope that... that you might join us at the Veterans for 911 Truth, yet another avenue in trying to attack the problems that we've been witnessing. And appreciate you taking part in the interview.
Well, thanks very much, Alphonse. I appreciate the opportunity, and we'll be in touch.
Great.
We'll
talk again.
Thanks for listening to the Grassroots Infomedias of the People radio show. And we're now also the official radio show of Veterans for 911 Truth. Veterans for 911 Truth is located on the internet at the911t.org. That's Victor911Tango.org. And we've been making a lot of waves in the 911 Truth community. A lot of people have noticed us. We fly our flags with the Union down. That's a flag that symbolizes dire distress. We believe that the United States of America is in dire distress, and we're putting out the SOS. So if you can help us out, if you're a veteran, or even if you're not a veteran, we'll accept the help of anyone who is a patriot of the United States, even the world. If you believe in truth and justice, then you should be helping us out because we're trying to undo the coup d'etat that has been taking place here in the United States. This is Alphonse signing off for now. Thanks for listening.